You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the world of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts and everything else making news. Today is actually the Super Bowl, so you will hear this later in the week, but today we're recording this Super Bowl Sunday, and I am joined by the owner of Premier Wrestling, John LaRocca. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. And along with being the owner of Premier Wrestling, you're also a regular contributor to the Wrestling Observer, where you provide coverage of Bellator Fighting Championship, among other things. And then also you have a background in professional wrestling. And what brought you to this point now where you're running Premier Wrestling?
I was booking All Pro Wrestling in June of 2012. Not a major conflict, but just, there's certain things happen, and I decided to just kind of step away from booking APW, and then I kind of took a break for a while, maybe get a mental break, and then I always wanted to promote a certain style of pro wrestling more towards kind of a mixture of mixed martial arts and pro wrestling, pretty much bring back the sport of professional wrestling. Focus on wins and losses, focus on the one single championship, and just wanted to present pro wrestling unlike all the others, which I think is all pretty much the same old show that you see. They're all copies of every indie show I see, like a copy of Monday Night Raw or a pay-per-view or WWE Lite. So I just wanted to do something different, give fans an alternative in this area.
What's interesting is that Dave Meltzer recently he went out of his way to suggest a match from your company. Your December show, you had Jeff Cobb, who's your champion, wrestle Oliver John. And what were your thoughts of the match, and how did it feel for Dave Meltzer to kind of suggest fans to view that match?
That match there, Cobb versus Oliver John, is probably my favorite match I've ever booked. It was a thing of beauty for sure. 30-minute Broadway, and like you said, it looked like a real fight. I mean, those guys are tremendous. Oliver John, one of the best out there, a true ring general. And Jeff Cobb is just a freak of an athlete, a former 2004 Olympian. So, I mean, it just was a perfect marriage. And the crowd was into all 30 minutes. And just everything worked out perfectly. It was a beautiful match. And I'm very proud of it. And, you know, I've been friends with Dave for a while, and he's a good, and you know, and I respect his opinion, and so him, you know, putting it over really meant a lot to me. So it was cool.
I've seen Jeff Cobb throughout the years wrestling for different companies. I remember a few years ago he was a part of a tag team called the Border Patrol, and Jeff Cobb, I'm not familiar with him.
Are you talking about Oliver? You talking about Oliver John, right?
Yeah. Oh yes, Oliver John. Yes, I've seen Oliver John throughout the years.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff Cobb, I had never seen him wrestle before. I looked him up a little bit. He was a 2004 Olympic wrestler, I believe, for what country was he for?
Guam.
Guam, okay. So he's a 2004 Olympic wrestler. He was a top 20 finalist in the world, I believe, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the first, and then a lot of professional wrestling companies can't claim to have an Olympic wrestler on their roster, and you're one of the few companies that can, TNA with Kurt Angle as well. But Jeff Cobb, he's a very big guy, but he moves around very, very well. Athleticism for being that size is what's surprising. Not just the fact that he's athletic, it's at that size. When did you first see Jeff Cobb, and what do you think? How long has he been wrestling?
He's only been wrestling for a few years. I want to say he started wrestling in 2010, I believe. I first saw him in 2012. I was booking APW, and they only have one promotion out there called Action Zone Wrestling. And the promoter, Daryl Bonilla, contacted me said, you know, they're going to be in the Bay Area and wanted to know if they can get on a show. And kind of just pretty much just wanted a match, you know, just kind of get some work in while they're in town. And there's a couple of them, Jeff Cobb, of course, this guy, Kaimana, who's a hell of a talent, is also on the premier roster, and Mark Anarchy and Bobby Bolt. So I told them, you know, send me the footage. I really didn't know who they were. Send me their footage on YouTube, and I was really impressed with Kaimana, but once I looked up Jeff Cobb and saw what he could do, I was like, okay, let's make something special out of this. So I did this gimmick where I called the Pacific Coast Challenge, basically a friendly competition between two promotions, APW and Action Zone Wrestling. And we did like a best of three series, had a tag match, and then I had two singles matches. And the main event was my champion at the time of APW, Timothy Thatcher, against Jeff Cobb, Action Zone Wrestling. And I just knew that match at the end was going to be good. I mean, I was going to put APW over because, you know, that's, you know, or it's going to be in APW. It would be kind of funny if I did it the other way, but I didn't matter. It didn't matter because I knew Cobb and Thatcher was going to have a really great match. They did, and I highly recommend people looking that one up on online. Try to just look up APW and Jeff Cobb and Timmy Thatcher. It's a hell of a match. And then at the end of it, like, you know, the crowd didn't care if APW won the best of three series. Like, it was just a great match. Everyone won. We did, like, this big celebration at the end of, like, Action Zone Wrestling and APW in the ring together. So it was really, really cool night. And then I used to, when I was at APW, I started the Young Lions Cup tournament featuring all the young talent in the area. And in May, I was announcing it, and Jeff Cobb contacted me. And they said, hey, how can I get in that? And I was like, wow, you're going to come out here? And he's like, yeah, I'll definitely want to do it. And so I put Jeff Cobb over for the Young Lions Cup APW. Because there's no better athlete in that tournament than him. So,
March 30th, your company runs again, and Jeff Cobb's in the main event. We will talk about that show later in the evening, but first, a mixed martial arts company that's trying to do something different. It's a company, like I said, you cover for Wrestling Observer, Bellator Fighting Championships. Recently, they had made the decision to, last season they had announced that for the first time, non-tournament winners were going to have the ability to get a title shot. And I guess this is the first or the second time, depending on what you consider the Alvarez-Chandler rematch, now the third fight. But Pat Curran will have the opportunity to go again against Daniel Strauss. Of all of the challengers or champions, I guess, lose their title, what are your opinions on Curran getting the rematch against Strauss?
I'm not against it. I know a lot of controversy came out of that, especially I think Strauss was even upset. Patricky Pitbull, who won the Season 9 featherweight tournament, is upset because he was guaranteed a shot. And he fought four times and won in 2013. But, you know, you also got to understand Bellator's on Spike now, and Spike has a lot of influence on Bellator. And when Spike, you know, purchased Bellator or got kind of, you know, all that kind of stuff, Viacom, Pat Curran was one of the guys that they kind of picked as one of the faces of the company. So, you know, I'm sure there's a little pressure from both, and so they went with it. I mean, it just looks bad because Strauss routed Curran in the title. He didn't beat him, he didn't knock him out or submit him, but, you know, for five rounds, he pretty much dominated. And Pat Curran did not look like himself. I was there live at that fight. And at the weigh-ins, he looked really bad at the weigh-ins. And I had a strong feeling that Strauss was going to win. And he did. And I think maybe Curran will have a little better effort out this time. I still see Strauss winning, though, because Strauss is very underrated. And he's a really good wrestler. Like, just, you know, he just keeps coming forward. So I'm not completely against it. I think it's, you know, they got to do what they got to do to build interest, you know. And when you have a growing company that's getting their name out there, you know, promoting a trilogy is, you know, sounds more interesting, you know, to people that might not know the company. And I think, oh, a trilogy, that's supposed to be a classic view or something. So maybe they'll tune in and keep a couple extra viewers, but, you know, we'll see.
As a promoter, how developing a meritocracy for receiving a title shot is something that a lot of people discuss it, but it's not something that everyone, I think, agrees on. And, example, the Curran-Strauss rematch. I mean, Bellator had a strict guidelines for how you got a title shot, which was the tournament format. And then recently, due to pressure, I think, from a lot of media members specifically, and probably from Viacom and Spike as well, they bent the rules so Eddie Alvarez could rematch against Michael Chandler. And now, as a promoter of a professional wrestling company, which is a little bit different because obviously you're able to dictate the flow and where things go, what are your opinion on who deserves the title shot just generally? Because we've seen UFC over the past few years, they've given title shots to people, for example, Nick Diaz, and a lot of people feel that that was not warranted. But what are your thoughts on meritocracies for title shots? I guess just generally.
Well, I think it works out. I mean, for pro wrestling, pro wrestling and MMA, it's the same thing when it comes to building up fights. You want to put fights that people want to pay to see. So, but you know, for me personally, when it comes to Premier, I have a strict formula, just kind of like Bellator. I guess had a strict formula, even though they did a couple, you know, Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler thing, but and Pat Curran and Dana Strauss. But for me, I think it's a hook from that's a part from other promotions out there, and it's tough to book in a way because sometimes, like, if obviously, for example, Jeff Cobb and Oliver John go 30 minutes. A lot of people want to see that rematch, and they're going to get that rematch one day. But I also like the idea that's going to come down the line and not right away, for maybe people want it a little more. So yeah, but you know, when you got a guy that's going to draw interest, you know, the UFC or any other promotion, pro wrestling or not. You know, they're going to put that fight first. That's the way it goes. And that's why a lot of these guys and men, you understand, they got to build up their fights. They got to request fights. They got to think that publicly after they win fights. And that's how they get those fights. But, you know, personally, for my promotion, yes, I like the up the ranking. I think it's a different sometimes it's apart from everyone else. But when it comes to MMA, UFC in particular, you got to go with the fight's going to draw, you know, for pay-per-view.
I think there's a, you know, unless your company goes under a strict, this is what you need to do before you have a title shot like Bellator did, mm-hmm. I think for the other companies, which I enjoy that as well, right, because I like to have variety in entertainment. But I think if you're a company like UFC, for example, or WWE, I think that there are opportunities to do almost anything. And, for example, I'll discuss the Nick Diaz-George St. Pierre fight. We had Nick Diaz, a guy who was undefeated for, I believe, 6 years, who had beaten all the top names not in the UFC. And then he had come to the UFC, beat BJ Penn, who was a perennial name, a very one of the best talents of all time, and had a very controversial fight with Carlos Condit, where a lot of people were wanting to change the rubrics for what graded a fight, because Condit employed a strategy that saw him backing up a lot. Very controversial loss against Carlos Condit. He also failed a drug test, but not for a performance-enhancing drug, for marijuana. And I think that there was an opportunity there for an absence of a clear challenger to give Nick Diaz that opportunity, and that was a fight that a lot of people wanted to see. Nick Diaz, who a lot of people saw as the best guy not in the UFC, now that he was in the UFC, they had an opportunity to do the George St. Pierre fight. And I think that sometimes you can, if you don't have a strict guidelines, like I said, I think there are times where you do have an opportunity to build up a fight that is going to get interest. I don't believe that there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a business, and UFC's in the business of selling pay-per-view, so the guy like Nick Diaz and GSP, how can they pass that up? You know, obviously, it's great, so it did like almost a million buys, right? North American domestic buys, so it was one of the best pay-per-view numbers they've had in a long time, for sure.
Now, what the fans want to see sometimes is a tricky thing, and right now in World Wrestling Entertainment, you have the fans vocally wanting to see Daniel Bryan in an expanded role. World Wrestling Entertainment's entering into an interesting aspect of the company where they're going to completely change the business model. They're going to the WWE Network, which they're going to have all the pay-per-views currently on the network, starting with WrestleMania this year. And they've brought back Dave Bautista, we were going to see some involvement from Hulk Hogan on the upcoming broadcast. A lot of rumors that they're close to bringing Sting for the first time into the company, even though he's a wrestling legend. And what are your feelings about the fan base's reaction to Daniel Bryan and the direction of the company with or without Daniel Bryan?
I think if I was them, I'd go with Daniel Bryan because, you know, something that's organic that kind of came out. And, you know, I think you got to go with it and see how it gets over and how it goes, you know. And I think they screwed up. I think they should have put the belt on Bryan in October at the Hell in Cell pay-per-view. I think that was the right time. And then, but now since they kind of, you know, didn't do that, the fans are really, really reacting, getting behind Bryan, and now everything disappoints them at this point. But it would be cool to see somehow, some way they can pull the trigger on Bryan at WrestleMania. But I don't know. I have a feeling that they're not going to do that. So
I find it interesting that WWE has all these hours of television, right? Recently, I was looking up stats on people. And Mike Tyson, who in another era was seen as the baddest man on the planet, because World Wrestling Entertainment, they're known to promote guys of a certain size. And Tyson at one point was the baddest man on the planet. And a lot of stats and figures I look up, he was only about 5'10 or 5'11. He was under 6 foot tall. And Floyd Mayweather, who's currently one of the biggest money draws in boxing, is anywhere between 5'8 and 5'9, from what I can see. So not a big height disparity, even though there was a big weight disparity. And the thing that boxing has allowed those two guys in different eras to draw a lot of money is that they had different vehicles to promote them. Floyd Mayweather being the pay-per-view king, the undefeated guy, people trying to knock him off the pedestal. The belts that he has, though a lot of belts, aren't really as important as his record. And Tyson, you always had the sense of excitement. And in World Wrestling Entertainment, it's even though they have all these hours of television, there's not exactly the different hooks to get you excited and the different events that they promote. Do you get that feeling as well, or what are your thoughts, I guess, overall, the general direction of WWE?
They always change so much, it's hard to get a focus on direction. You know, the only thing you kind of see that they're really focused on is making Roman Reigns the next big star of the company. So you kind of see that progression of the storyline, which is nice to see. But, you know, they do a lot of start and stop. They do a lot of one guy's on a roll for a while, and then, you know, for example, like Biggie Langston, they put I know Intercontinental title, the U.S. title, is kind of like the death nail. You shouldn't even win those because, you know, you're in trouble. But, like, you know, they start pushing this guy, he's winning TV matches, he's winning pay-per-view matches, and all of a sudden he does a job with Randy Orton in a match on SmackDown that's not even anyone else could have been in that match against Orton. You didn't have to use Biggie Langston to take the fall there and stop his momentum of going upwards. And I think also they beat him in a six-man tag when you had a guy, I think like Rey Mysterio, who you could have beat instead of him. You know, like, it's just very strange what they do. They kind of do these, like because to them, finishes don't matter. Like, wins and losses don't matter to WWE. They don't care. You know, they'll do whatever they want, and then they're ready to push you up, and if they don't think you're getting over, they push you down really fast. So it's pretty frustrating to watch the product, you know, at times.
It certainly is. And another product that can be frustrating to watch as well as TNA. And recently we've seen them run their shows in England and to big audiences. And I believe they've produced all the television shows leading to this year's lockdown. The first week that has aired this past Thursday. And what is your interest level and TNA's product?
Very small. It's WWE light. It's just poorly booked. Nobody in that company is over. No one cares about it. Dixie Carter making herself a character is just horrible, you know? It's so, like, late 90s, you know? She's just Stephanie McMahon light. And if everything they do is just copy WWE, and that's what's wrong with the company. You know, you got to be an alternative to what WWE is doing. You know, it'd be nice if they would do something different instead of just trying to do the same old crap, you know, and And even if they do close down and just say, for example, if they Jeff Jarrett and Toby Keith get their thing going and they start pulling their promotion, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be the same thing. And it's going to be the same rating. And no one's going to care. You know, so, yeah, I watch it if I have nothing going on Thursday night and my wife's not home or something, I'll watch it. But if not, I for some reason, I still have my DVR and I just end up deleting before I watch it. And I just read about it in the Observer and kind of see what Dave's thoughts on it. And usually it's like, gosh, I think I didn't watch it after I read that, you know. So,
I mean, each week I kind of get my thoughts on TNA, and it doesn't really change much week to week. I mean, they're presenting a wrestling product. It's uninspiring, to say the least. So it's very hard to kind of, you know, there was a moments where I think it elicited, you know, different emotional reactions because you wanted it to do well. It featured a lot of guys who you wanted to see get opportunities on the big stage, like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. A lot of talented guys who wouldn't get an opportunity with Royal Wrestling Entertainment. But then it definitely went in the direction to where it's uninspiring, to say the least. Last night, UFC promoted UFC 169, and it was a very underwhelming show. Uriah Faber got beat in the main event by Henan Burrell. And there's, I think, a couple of different takeaways from that fight. Henan Burrell kind of establishing himself as one of the best fighters in the company. But unfortunately, with not a lot of challengers on the horizon, they were talking about TJ Dillashaw or Rafael Assuncao. I don't know how much interest one of their top talents are going to be able to get in his future fights. Uriah Faber, who was on a roll, one of the best fighters in the company, unable to secure a UFC title again. What were kind of your takeaways from the main event, and I guess from the whole show?
It was kind of, you know, an underwhelming show, like you said. A lot of decisions, which makes for, you know, when you have the record decisions of 10, makes it kind of like a boring show. And that sometimes it's going to happen that way, you know, but they only had like two good matches, and of course the best match was Abe Trujillo, Jamie Varner, which was just a crazy fight. Definitely an early candidate for fight of the year. Just wild, just back and forth. And I thought Trujillo was going to be a buzzsaw, just destroy Varner, but you know, Varner's, you know, wrestling's really good, and he caught Abe a good time, had a rock, and then finally, Trujillo hit that big right. That's perfectly. It was awesome. And then I also liked Aya Quinta versus Lee on the prelims. It was a fun fight to watch. Other than that, it was just kind of a you know, pretty much blah show for them. And then of course the biggest news is the controversial ending, which I believe, and I think many people believe, it was stopped too early. And then you know, Faber's like one of my all-time favorites, and one, not because he's such a great fighter, but also because he's just a class act, he's always been. And then, like, so that was pretty cool how he handled that situation. It looks like to me, it sounded like from what Dana White was saying at the press conference, that he kind of feels that Faber might get kind of alluded that he might be pushing for a rematch for him, which, you know, that's all they have, really. I mean, TJ Dillashaw, even though Faber's trying to push his TJ getting the next title shot, you know, they could do, like, if this is the Booker and me, they can have TJ get the next title shot. That could be like a Fox main event. I don't think anyone's going to buy a pay-per-view with that. It might be a good semi-main event to put underneath another title match. But I would probably keep that for like a Fox TV show. And I could see Burrell beating Dillashaw. And then you can kind of, you know, do something where, you know, Burrell beat the student and now the teacher's going to get one more shot, you know, or something like that. But, you know, that, but there's not much interest. You know, Rafael Assuncao, that's another TV title fight or a semi. But even that, you know, no one's going to buy a pay-per-view for Burrell and Assuncao. Even though Burrell is one hell of a fighter, one of the best, that just doesn't have that star power anymore.
You know, I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we were talking about meritocracies for title shots earlier. And Faber, I think, has clearly established himself as the second or third best guy, depending on where you'd place Dominic Cruz after being out for a couple of years. But Faber's clearly the second best guy in the division. He's been like a buzzsaw through a lot of guys, including a very, very impressive win just a few months ago against Michael McDonald, who at one point received an interim title shot as well and was seen as one of the top guys in the weight division as well. Uriah Faber made that fight look easy. And it's kind of an unfortunate situation that Faber's in. And he's gotten a lot of title shots, but he's the number three guy in the division. So it's interesting to think that while you want him to go out and fight other people, but he makes it look so easy when he fights anyone who's not the champion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they could spin it to where they could do a third fight, even though Barral, dominated the first fight. This one, he was dominating this fight. I mean, I think Barral was going to beat him anyways. But with the controversy ending, you could kind of spin it. And, they have a great editing team, a great production team, the UFC, and I'm sure they can spin it to where, they could build up interest, Even though it's real, you can still promote and market it and focus on something, a little controversial ending of a fight, and spin that into turn to interest on a rematch. So, they can do it. I don't know if it'd be Barral Faber would be a pay-per-view either. I think it'd be a great box main event for sure.
And also last night, I believe we may have seen the last heavyweight Frank Mir. Frank, who was a promising young fighter, won the UFC title at a very young age. And he had a motorcycle wreck where he suffered a great injury to his leg, came back, wasn't exactly the same fighter, was really, really overweight. And then he won a fight. And then after that, he propelled himself to winning another UFC title and had a very, very good second half of his career. If you look back at young Frank Mir and what he was, he obviously had his flaws, right? I mean, he would get tired late in fights. His stand-up wasn't exactly there. But on the ground, he was just incredible. And it's interesting that we kind of had that young Frank Mir robbed from us. But we still did have a long Frank Mir career, and he had a lot of boring fights, right? But he also had a lot of good interest building up into some of his fights, namely the Brock Lesnar feud. And what were your thoughts, I guess, overall on the entirety of Frank Mir's career? And do you think we've seen the end of Frank Mir?
I think he had a great career. He's definitely one of the best that they in the division, I think, for a long time. Definitely the best ground, one of the best ground heavyweights of all time. And he did help build up interest into the biggest pay-per-view of all time, UFC 100, with the feud with Brock Lesnar. I think he had a great career in the UFC. At the end, of course, everyone kind of falls off, so... I think he's it's time. From what I understand, I heard he says he doesn't want to retire. So, if I was Bellator, I'd sign him. They need more guys with some name value to help build up some interest. So, if I was them, I would sign him. But we'll see. I think he's done with the UFC for sure. I think this is it. After that performance, he got destroyed by Overeem. So, yeah. I can see him still. If he wants to fight again, I can see Bellator picking him up, or maybe even World Series of Fighting, which would be interesting. But
Frank Mir's had three losses after last night, his fourth loss in a row. He was still ranked number 10 in the company, and I thought that was very surprising. After three losses, you're still a top 10 guy in the company. And but you look at Bellator, and they're having a World Heavyweight title match coming up, and the heavyweight division. It's kind of down, I think. I don't think Bellator exactly has the greatest heavyweight talent. UFC has the top two heavyweights, I believe, of all time in Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. But then you look at the rest of the roster, and Travis Brown, really, really good talent, and Verdum, really, really good talent, but it kind of drops off from there. And it's kind of interesting that I guess the division where a lot of people associate big matches, the heavyweight, the world heavyweight title. It's kind of their weakest division talent-wise. I think kind of in the sport right now.
Yeah, I think both companies, for sure, UFC and Bellator, who's going to beat Kane? I don't think anyone's going to beat Kane, personally. The only guy I can do is probably Junior Santos, and I don't think he can beat him. You know, I mean, you got to beat him once, but I don't think he's ever going to beat him again, and I don't think they're going to book that fight again. So, I just see Kane holding that for a long, very long time. Bellator for sure has, they don't even admit that it's not their strongest division. And their champion, Minakov, is a beast, though. That guy, if he went to the UFC, he'd do really well. And he's going to destroy Chuck Congo, in my opinion, on April 4th. It'd be nice to just add Frank Mir to that mix, kind of help the heavyweight division ranks. And he lost 3 times in a row in the UFC, and he's still a name people recognize. So, and that's what Bellator needs at this point. There's a young growing company, and they need to bring in a couple of veterans, a couple of main guys to kind of help the guys like Minakov. See, Minakov beats Frank Mir. Add some more interest in Minakov, and other guys like that too. So it's a good thing that if I was him, I'd get him to see what the price is,
March 30th, Premier Wrestling. What can fans expect to see at this show?
We're going to have, Gilroy, California at the IFDS Lodge / Portuguese Hall in Gilroy, California. And more of the same, just solid, hard, solid wrestling. I have a great roster of guys that get it, that truly get it. And they go in there and they bust their ass from match one to match six. So you have 6 to 7 matches on the card. I've done 8. I did 8 in December, but that was like a little special show. But this is going to be another special show coming up, a 1-year anniversary, but I decided to keep it back to 6 matches. I kind of like that personally. And, the main event is the premier heavyweight champion, Jeff Cobb, defending against Sledge, who's a young kid who has a lot of potential, great size, also has a mixed martial arts background, trained with the Pit and San Luis Obispo. So you're definitely going to see an interesting style there coming together with the Cobb's wrestling and Sledge's MMA background. And the final main event, I have the number one contenders match. It's J.R. Kratos versus Double D Dave Dutra. They wrestled before at the first premier event, and Dutra beat Kratos to win the championship back then on the first show. So this is a rematch of that, and also to see who will face the champion on our next card, which will be in a few months after that. So I haven't finalized my date yet for the card after March 30th. Then you have Oliver John versus Timothy Thatcher, which would be just a fantastic match. And then we have a couple other ones we haven't announced yet. So those three right there, it's worth $10. It's really cheap to see great, great wrestling.
So there you go. And if listeners want to follow more of you, where can they go social media-wise?
For me, on Twitter, LaRoccaJL. The Premier website is premierwrestle.com. You can look up Premier on Facebook, and we're always updating that. And also on YouTube, just look up Premier Wrestle. Every Thursday, we're kind of late in the game on this, and we apologize to our fans about this, but we're going to be posting a match starting from our first show every Thursday on to what we have now. So it's going to be really cool to see and, see from our first show, from our humble beginnings of a small crowd to selling out our very last show. So it's pretty cool to see, and then a lot of great matches throughout last year to be on there. So definitely check out. And for those fans out there listening who haven't seen Jeff Cobb versus Oliver John, that is online now at Premier Wrestle on YouTube. So I highly recommend that match.
And for us, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you are there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook page. And this is Alex, and thank you very much, John, for joining us. And that's This Week in OWW Radio.
All right, well, that's